Our first presentation this morning will be from Tyson. Since becoming CEO about 3.5 years ago, Donnie Smith and his team have transformed Tyson into a top-tier multi-protein company with long-term strategic and growth targets. In fact, over the last 4 years, the price of Tyson stock has doubled, as Tyson's EPS of $2 is no longer a peak, but a base from which it will grow. This is particularly remarkable in the face of higher input costs, record-tight cattle supplies, and a soft economy. We look forward to hearing from how Donnie will accomplish his strategic goals. It gives me great pleasure to introduce the CEO of Tyson, Donnie Smith.
Thanks, Ken. Good morning, everybody. I have the obligatory slide written by our lawyers. They get paid by the word. And, of course, you guys are protein investors. You know the road gets a little bumpy anyway, and read the 10-K for certain risks that may apply. So here's what we'll talk about for the next 20 minutes or so. Number one, we're going to talk about what makes Tyson different. I kind of mean that in two ways. Number one, what makes us different from where we were a few years ago, but also we think what separates us from our competitors. Then we're going to talk a little bit about our growth, and then we'll talk some about innovation, and that's about the time I'll flip it over to Noel, and he'll talk about finish up the conversation on innovation and then talk about the fundamentals. So, you know, if you really want to get a good view of what Tyson looks like in the future, it helps a lot to start with our past. And I think you'll agree that something's been a little different over the last 3 years. At least I hope you can see that. Let me run through real quick a list of some things that have been accomplished in the fiscal 10, 11, and 12 years, and we continue on that trend today. Generated $3.7 billion in operating cash flows, invested almost $2 billion back into the business to fuel improvements, paid down $1.1 billion in debt, got to investment grade with all three agencies, improved our net debt to cap to about 18.4%. Our liquidity was hanging around $2 billion at the end of fiscal 12. Purchased more than 22 million shares during this period, and since then we've added about 7.5 million more shares, so for a total of about just shy of 30 million shares. And achieved about $715 million during this three-year period of improvements, operational efficiencies in our poultry business. If you go back a little bit further and include the 09 fiscal year, that number is at $1 billion. So hopefully that's a fairly decent view of the past, but what about the future? So foundationally, we really needed to build our go-forward strategy on a really strong foundation, and that foundation is built on two things. Number one, a very strong capital structure, and number two, a very intense focus on the fundamental operating principles of running a good business. So if you have a foundation of a good capital structure and a good cost structure, we think that gives you the platform you need to be able to grow. And our growth strategy is really summed up in three words: accelerate, innovate, and cultivate. When we talk about accelerate, we're talking about accelerating our growth, our sales growth, and earnings growth, by the way, through our value-added poultry sales and prepared foods, and accelerating growth in our international operations. Innovation, yes, we'll be talking a lot about product innovation. You'll see a few slides on that here in a second. But I also want you to be thinking about innovating our business processes, innovating packaging, innovating the analytic capabilities that we use with our customers to help provide them solutions to grow their business. And then finally, it's important for us to make sure that we keep good, solid talent in our business and in front of you so that we can continue to perpetuate the results we've seen over the last 3.5 years for years and years and years to come. So it's very important for us to grow our talent as well as growing our business. So, you know, we think there's a lot of value in the diversity of our business. Yes, we're in all three proteins. And, you know, there may be times, like you saw in Q2, where our beef segment struggled a bit. But having all three proteins, we think, gives our investors a stable look, because something may not be right in one, but we've got other segments that will make up the difference. Multi-channel. Last Monday in our call, we talked about how food service demand appeared a little soft. We're a little bit stronger in retail, and having the ability to move the portfolio as the consumer moves, whether they're eating at home or eating away from home,
is a very important advantage to our business. And then finally, multinational. You know, in the U.S., in terms of our protein production, we're number one or number two in the major proteins, and so it's a little bit difficult if you look out 10 years to just grow our business domestically. So we've got to look outside the U.S., and we think with the international growth of protein demand at about 1.8 to 2.2% over the foreseeable 10 years, there's great growth opportunities for our business outside the U.S. So let's look at a little bit of the diversity in our portfolio. You can see some of our portfolio offerings in the lower part of this slide, but this slide, I think, gives a better view of the diversity. So what we do in this slide is we compare our offering with many of the offerings of our competitors, and yes, we have competitors that offer products in every part of the portfolio, but not the complete portfolio like we have, and that gives us a great advantage in portfolio pricing and in portfolio selling with our customers. And it moves us away from just pure commodity conversations. I'm gonna jump into our strategic growth. So here's what we want you to be thinking about our stock. Think about top-line sales growth in the 3 to 4%. You can see how we've done, and just look at the expectations for 13, 14, and 15. So be thinking of top-line sales growth at 3 to 4%. And inside of that, on our value-added sales, which be value-added poultry and prepared foods, and be thinking in terms of around a third of our overall business, just in round numbers, you should think about us growing that part of our business at twice the rate of the company's growth. So if the company's growing at 3 to 4% in sales, then the value added will be growing at 6 to 8. And then in our international operations, be thinking of that part of our business growing at twice the rate of the value added. So 3 to 4 total, 6 to 8 value added, 12 to 16 in international. And that's how we accelerate our growth forward, both not only on the top line, but also on the bottom line. If you look out over the, by the way, I love that part down there, in anticipating also this year at least or better than a year ago earnings in spite of absorbing another $450 million in incremental feed costs, that will bring, at the end of this year, our incremental feed costs since 2010 will approach $1.5 billion. So if you back up to that slide, it kind of makes that $2 shelf that Ken talked about a little bit more significant. You know, as we move forward, and I've got to move quickly here, you know, world population growth is going to continue, and we think over the next say 40 years, this world is going to have to find a way to double food production. Same amount of land, same amount of water, same amount of air. Very difficult challenge. Great opportunities, though, in ag and food, right? And so as we look forward at that, knowing the some of the limitations we have around the trust issues and growing particular protein segments here, it gives us a view of how aggressively we've got to grow our business outside of the U.S. And so if you look at this slide, this is what we will do between now and 2014. Our China business will be up to about 3 million head. In India, we'll grow at 61% up to about 450,000 head. In Brazil, our business will grow 54% up to 2 million head, and then we'll maintain Mexico. Our Mexico business is very, very good business now, and we'll continue to look for opportunities to grow that. I'm going to talk about innovation just a little bit, and innovation for us really leads with insights. You know, in addition to now the quality and the service that Tyson is known for, we have to continue to provide the product innovation to drive traffic and sales for our customers. We're, keep in mind, we've got all types of customers, maybe a QSR, it could be a mid-scale restaurant, big box retailer, club stores, small grocery chains, convenience stores, military, schools, on and on. And when they see weak demand, they really do focus their interest on the Discovery Center and ever more in our ideas and the ideas we can bring them for new products and how to help build their business. This year, our focus is really in three categories. One is in handheld, kind of the on-the-go items, and there we're enhancing our current line with some whole grain items and bolder flavors. Also in gluten-free, we've added gluten-free nuggets into our portfolio now, and also other gluten-free breaded items. And by the way, ours really, really, really taste good. And then the third thing is no antibiotics ever. This year we successfully launched in fresh chicken our Nature Raised Farms brand. And we continue to build out that line now with IQF products, frozen products, and then also a fully cooked line that will include whole grain breading and gluten-free offerings. So we're going to build out this line. The launch has been very successful so far, and we look forward to seeing what this No Antibiotics Ever line will do. So I'm going to pass the baton now over to Noel. He's going to talk a little bit about innovation in fresh meats and then cover some of the market fundamentals. Noel?
Thank you, Donnie. I'm going to start out by talking about some of the changing dynamics within the beef industry, and that's the further segmentation of the commodity products that we've produced in the past. And there's just a couple of examples that I've put up here. Many of you are probably familiar with the CAB brand, which is an industry brand. But in addition to that, we have unique programs that we operate for basically all of our major retail and food service operators, plus some company brands as well. Example of that would be in the lower left-hand corner, that Open Prairie Natural Angus. We have a pretty sizable natural program that that we've offered. That says the Never Ever program continues to grow in terms of volume and contribution. Same thing would be true on the pork side, and it really comes down to maximizing the total value of the livestock that we buy, whether it's in cattle and hogs, and that means that we have to further differentiate our product. We have the same type of offering that on the pork side, where there is a natural offering, where there's no additives. To move on to market fundamentals, any of you that have really followed Tyson in the past in the beef and pork sector, we've talked numerous times about how we're in a spread business, and this really illustrates that. The gold bar at the top is the total revenue that that we've had historically, and then the gray line would be the cattle costs. So the difference between those plus operating costs would be the type of margin that we have. So in our business, it's really the revenue that determines the cattle costs and what we pay. There's a very, very high correlation between this number being in the low to mid-90s correlation. You can see that in the second quarter we did have some compression that took place. The revenue was not as great on some of the premium type products that we expected. So that would be products such as Prime, Upper Choice. That bit that was relatively weak in the second quarter. Cattle costs didn't adjust quickly enough. And typically what happens in time is that those spreads do correct, and that is, in fact, what has happened. So as we moved through January, February, and March, we had compression. You obviously saw that in our results, but they have returned back in April and particularly May now. On the pork side, same thing is true. Revenue does determine what we end up paying for livestock. You can see that there's a little bit more variability, but you know, the pork industry, we've had a pretty good run. Our typical range is in a 6 to 8% return, and we are within that range. And you know, the last couple of years we've actually exceeded that. Talk about each one of the protein segments. You can see that the gold bar is the export of each one of the proteins. You can see that on the poultry side, it's relatively flat. Production has been flat to a slight increase, so poultry production is expected to increase slightly this year, domestic availability. On the beef side, you can see that since 2003, which is where the big dip is, that's where BSE was noted in the United States. We lost a high percentage of our exports, took a sizable drop. We've recovered now to a percentage that in volume that was greater than what we were exporting in 2003. So we are back above the original numbers now. And you see from a production standpoint that that we peaked in domestic production a couple of years ago. And I'll show you here in a minute that what that means is that the protein available for consumption here in the United States continues to decline. On the pork side, volumes have remained relatively constant the last couple of years, but you can see the gold bar, which is the exports, continue to increase. Exports as a percentage of production will run in the low to mid 20s. Right now we're running about 22%, 21-22%. Last year we were running about 25%, so they're down slightly from what they were a year ago. But you can see over time they've continued to increase. A lot of that's due to really some of the change in global fundamentals with some of the countries that we compete with from a production standpoint, as well as growth in consumption in a lot of developing markets. The total protein supply, as you can see, which is the gray line, continues to decrease. That's net domestic availability, or the amount of protein that's available for consumption in the United States. And you can see what's happened as a result with price, which is the gold bar. Prices continue to escalate, and this year is not any different. We will have record prices on the beef side. Poultry is having a good go on the pricing side, and I'd say on the pork side it's relatively constant. So we are seeing increased pricing, particularly on the beef side this year. This is simply a demand graph. You can see that when I talked a moment ago about the amount of protein consumed domestically, that's the bottom line. And you can see that the amount of protein consumed this year is expected to be about 60 to 61 pounds per head. And the price, you can see, it will be somewhere around $1.90 per pound. That's what we would refer to as the cutout value. Currently, we're running significantly higher than that in pricing. Last night it was slightly over $2.05. So we are at levels that we've never been before. And in Ken's opening comments, the question is at what point will consumers push back? It's the same question that we've been asking the last couple of years. But the net has been that prices have continued to escalate. On the pork side, as I mentioned, the pork exports have backed off. Some this year due to some issues that we've had with beta agonist issues, which is a growth enhancement additive that has been banned in Russia and in China. So we are dealing with a couple of trade restrictions right now, and that's what results in the increase in protein or pork availability in the United States. From a pricing standpoint, you can see that Bob Brown, who's one of the ag economists, forecasts the price to be roughly equal to a year ago. Chicken breast, you see that the amount available will increase from a year ago, and at the same time the price is expected to increase. And it's very, very likely that due to the extremely high prices and decreased availability that we've seen in beef this year, that poultry, in fact, has been the benefactor of that. So to wrap up, what I'd like to leave with you is that Donnie had mentioned that it's imperative that we remain the low-cost, efficient producer of our protein, which is really the fundamentals. And that's a big part of the fundamental change that Donnie talked about in the last 3 years and the significant improvement in our results. You noted that we are actively pursuing a number of acquisitions and growth, particularly in the prepared food segment. And it's been made very, very clear by Donnie when he talked about the revenue growth of 3 and 4% and the 10% EPS growth. I can assure you that's the fundamentals that we're focused on each and every day. So with that, thank you, and we'll be glad to open it up to questions.
We'll open up to questions. Feel free to use the app, and I will be checking. I'm going to open up with a first question. Look, Tyson has delivered on cost savings in the chicken industry. You have moved your value added up, and you've absorbed significant feed costs. Yet, at the same time, your normalized margin for chicken has stayed 5 to 7%. It seems that there might be a movement in those margins. Even absent China developing that strategy, can you talk about not only the sustainability but the likelihood that the 5 to 7 would go to 6 to 8, 7, 7 to 9, and thereafter?
Yeah, great question. So the thing to think about there is last year, if you look at the domestic part of our chicken business, which is by far the biggest, we were just at the low end of the range, and that was after absorbing through $1 billion worth of incremental cost. This year we're adding 450, 500 million or so more to that. And again, the last two quarters, as we said on the call, we'll be at the upper end of the range. So I think finally now that our performance is starting to outrun the part of the earnings that have been masked by this incredibly high commodity cost. The market, because of high beef and pork prices, seems to be accepting higher chicken prices. So I think going forward, as long as we stay focused on not losing any of the fundamental execution that we've achieved so far, and we focus our growth in the value-added type of our category, we'll be sure to stay in the range, upper end of the range, and certainly do what we can to try to expand that over time.
Can you discuss the different export pictures across the three protein industries, going through chicken, beef, and pork?
Start with beef and pork.
All right, I'll start on the beef and pork side. Let me start out with pork. Pork exports are down this year, at least year to date. Mexico, Canada has remained solid. The decrease has really come in most significantly in Russia. Volumes to Japan have been down most recently. Korea has been down. Greater China has been flat, I would say. So the net of that is down. As I mentioned, it's due to some trade restrictions that we have on a dispute with an additive called beta agonist, or ractopamine as it's commonly referred to. So pork will be down as a percentage of production, 3, maybe 4%. Beef exports are actually up this year. We continue to have very, very solid business on a global basis, but it's no different than usual. We do have some disruptions in various countries that we dealt with for a number of years, but net-net export volumes continue to increase. As we look forward, many of you are probably aware that there is a new agreement with Japan, which gives us even more optimism for additional increased volumes into Japan. So many of the Asian countries, I can tell you there's tremendous interest in many, many visitors that we've had, particularly most recently.
Yeah, just real quick on the chicken side, as a percent of total, as a percent of total production, poultry exports, again, are look to be strong this year. You know, markets move around. Mexico's a great market now. The industry's kind of de-emphasized Russia as Russia has grown to be more self-sufficient. So the market moves around a bit. But still, we have a good outlook for exports.
History is a guide. The chicken industry tends to try and expand in this environment. So can you talk about, what are the opportunities to expand, or what is the limitations to the expansion, And can you give us some sort of idea of what the production levels might look like in the next year or two?
I'm shocked you would say that. So, you know, this year, just in terms of the pullet flock, there is not an availability to buy a lot of eggs or to buy a lot of pullets over the next 6 months or so. Also, if you couple that with a lot of eggs from the U.S., hatching eggs going down to Mexico because of their AI problem, the availability to increase production in the U.S. over the next 6 months or so is very slight. If you look then you know, typically our industry does not increase production going into the November-December time period. Obviously, that's a couple of holidays during the year when the public says they'd rather eat ham and turkey for some strange reason. No offense. I think what you'll see, though, is the availability sometime next year for an increased production. But one thing that I think we can bear in mind is, in light of the current pricing situation, in spite of the payroll tax hike, higher gas prices, and that kind of thing, there has been consumer acceptance of higher pricing at retail. You know, really high beef prices make really high chicken prices not look so high. Really high beef prices make pretty high pork prices not look so high. And so there has been consumer acceptance in the food service side with, 50s, beef 50s trading, in the, 90 cent range.
Upper
and
90s.
90s over $2. It's very hard to comp a last year's chicken promotion with a beef promotion this year. So we think that gives us another good year of chicken promotions in national account and food service.
We have two more questions here, and we have 3 minutes. So I'm going to do both of them and try and get you make sure you answer both of them. In respect to your international strategy for poultry, how do you feel the impact for India will have on the global demand and trade over the next 5 to 10 years? And then can you comment on the margin contribution from non-muscle components for beef, pork, and chicken at Tyson?
All right, you were sitting right beside me. I don't know how I missed the latter part of the first question.
The latter part of the first question is international strategy specifically for poultry. What impact do you feel that India will have on global demand and trade over the next 5 to 10 years?
Yeah, we see the growth in India as steady but slow. It's off a really small base. Per capita consumption of meat in India is relatively small compared to the other geographies. We want to be there. We think it's a great story over the next 10, 20, 30 years. We want to be very relevant. We have a value-added offering there. So I think you'll continue to see, double-digit growth in India, but it's off a really, really small base. And then the
last
one.
Can you comment on the margin contribution from the non-muscle component from beef, pork, and chicken?
Non-muscle component. That's what we would typically refer to as a drop credit, which would be rendered products, variety meats, and hides. And I can tell you that just like on the primal and the cutout basis, that we are also at historic levels. The drop credit has continued to escalate. And again, it comes back to growing demand, particularly in developing countries. Hide and leather demand is at new record levels, as are prices. And just as in beef and in primal products, the question is at what point will that stop? And we don't know the answer to that yet because it continues to escalate.
And in poultry, it still continues to be good like it has over the last couple of 3 years.
Great. Let's thank Donnie and his team for their insights. For those who'd like to learn more about the outlook for chicken, we also have a panel discussion later today of three private chicken companies. Thank you, everybody.